This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Even the most amicable divorces take a heavy emotional toll. But beyond that, there are a number of financial considerations. Often there are assets, property, land, cars, jewelry, and other household items that need to be divided. There are also legal fees. And there are child support and other ongoing payments. Dissolving a marriage can take years to recover from financially. Today we'll hear about ways to ease that process. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A delegation from a Native organization in the U.S. is taking part in events at the U.N. Climate Summit in Scotland. Jade Begay, director of Indian Collective's Climate Justice Campaign and a member of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, spoke Tuesday. She was part of a roundtable on President Biden's Justice 40 initiative to advance environmental justice and spur economic opportunity for disadvantaged communities. President Biden's Justice 40 promise is to deliver at least 40% of the overall benefits from federal investments in climate and clean energy to disadvantaged communities.
We're hoping that through Justice 40, the federal government really learns how to equitably channel resources directly to our frontline and indigenous communities. And we can help. There's a prime example over the last year with the CARES funding that kicked in for Indigenous communities during the pandemic. So, there's a bottleneck that can happen in the process where it takes a while for this federal funding to get invested into our communities and then to make its way directly to people. And so while that process is happening, NDN, organizations like mine, we've stepped in to really channel urgent and quick resources to our people.
The Indian Collective delegation will participate in a number of events at the Climate Summit throughout the week. National Native organizations are applauding bipartisan support for Native voting rights legislation. The Native American Rights Fund and the National Congress of American Indians praised Tuesday's announcement by Republican and Democratic senators, adding their support for the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. The legislation includes provisions for Native voting rights. More than a dozen Native organizations across the country have endorsed it. They're calling on Congress and the federal government to pass protections so Native voters have equal access to voting resources. U.S. Senators Brian Schatz and Lisa Murkowski, leaders of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, have introduced a resolution recognizing November as National Native American Heritage Month. The month celebrates Native American, Native Hawaiian, and Alaska Native people, their cultures, achievements, and contributions. More than 20 senators co-sponsored the resolution. Efforts are underway in Iowa by local community members urging schools to retire their Indian mascots. The federally recognized tribe in the state is also calling on more than 60 schools to drop their mascots. Mike Moen has more.
In Mason City, the school board is discussing whether the high school's Mohawk nickname should be discontinued. Leanne Clausen DeMontes, a mother of indigenous children in the district, says while some say it's part of school tradition, it's not a reason to keep using it.
You think about the tradition of tens of thousands of years of indigenous peoples in North America or elsewhere. And then, 95 or 100 years really just pales in comparison.
Coinciding with the local effort is a letter from the Meskwaki Nation, which calls upon 66 schools in Iowa to retire Native-themed mascots.
For a lot of folks, it's just simply not having good information or not knowing how to ask the questions about the use of Native American names.
But she feels there's less hostility toward the movement to retire these names, citing the racial reckoning from the past year. And at the pro level, franchises such as the Major League Baseball team in Cleveland are making changes. In Iowa, the Marion School District recently retired its Indians nickname.
That was Mike Moen, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian, presenting the annual Native Cinema Showcase. 47 films representing 39 Native nations in 13 countries, available from November 12th to the 18th on demand at americanindian.si.edu.
Support by BNSF Railway, innovating with fuel-efficient locomotives and technologies to help reduce emissions and improve air quality. More about BNSF's commitment to the environment at bnsf.com/tribalrelations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. If you've been through a divorce, you know how much emotional and psychological energy one needs to make it through. But another aspect of ending a marriage that people often don't think about until it's too late is financial disruption. Assets such as a home, land, vehicles, or even family heirlooms like jewelry and art. Who gets what? And how are those assets divided fairly? It's highly unlikely for a Native couple to start planning for divorce before it's an issue. But there are things that each individual can do to secure and protect one's financial future, just in case. And there are issues to consider if a split is inevitable, so the transition is less rocky. We'll hear about those today. We also want to hear from you. What advice do you have for navigating the financial hurdles of divorce? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us today from Shawnee, Oklahoma is Felicia Freeman. She's a credit coach for the Oklahoma Native Assets Coalition and a certified credit counselor for the Citizen Potawatomi Community Development Corporation. She's a Citizen Potawatomi tribal member. Welcome to Native America Calling, Felicia.
Thank you, Sean.
And joining us from Isleta Pueblo, New Mexico, Sheila Herrera and Miranda Lenti. Sheila is the executive director of Tiwa Lending Services, and Miranda is the loan officer for Tiwa Lending Services. Miranda is an enrolled member of Isleta Pueblo. Welcome back, Sheila.
Sean, thank you for having us.
Welcome back to you as well, Miranda.
Thank you.
I want to start our conversation. This whole topic of marriage, relationships, money, so many emotions can come into play in addition to managing the financial responsibilities that come with a marriage, long-term relationship. Felicia, before a marriage or developing a serious partnership, what kind of conversations should we have with our significant others about money, about finance?
Yeah, I think right off the beginning, you should have conversations that discuss how each of you handle your money and how you were taught as a child to handle money. I think that those behaviors and how we grew up managing money as a family certainly sets the tone how a relationship is going to include money.
So thinking about that, our childhoods, our upbringing, and how those experiences, how those relationships early in life play such a huge role in our lives as we become older and we grow up, what are some habits, some traits, some behaviors that Native families can do at an early age to promote financial well-being?
I think just having that money conversation, setting those financial goals together as a family, I think that really sets the tone in how we're going to handle money as an adult.
Okay. So I've heard the term before, money culture, with regard to families, conversations, parents, young children. At what age, Felicia, is it appropriate to start talking to a young person about money? How is it? Is there an age that's too early or not early enough? What do you think?
I don't think there's ever an age that it's too early. I think just starting a piggy bank with a child is so very important. Unfortunately, in our Native communities with generational poverty, we don't have a lot extra. So most of us grew up watching our families scrimp and scrape just to make the essential payments. And I'm saying electric, gas, paying for food for our families for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Now, Felicia, you are a certified credit counselor. You work with individuals, you work with families, you work with couples. What are some financial challenges that you see facing couples, facing married partners out there in the field?
I think it's difference in behaviors. Maybe one was taught a lot of financial expertise, while others are just thankful they make it through the day. So those people tend to not make those long-term goals. They tend to spend exactly what they make and let the day happen.
Now, we talked earlier about a couple having these conversations about money and their relationships. What about legal protections like prenuptial agreements? Do you see those at all in Native communities that you work in?
Unfortunately, I don't. Most of the people that I work with are in generational poverty, and they're trying to set good behaviors and habits, but there aren't a lot of assets coming into a relationship.
Does something like a prenuptial agreement make sense for a couple, even if they don't have a lot? I mean, so often we think of prenups as like these really wealthy people, right? Like movie stars and celebrities with these huge, huge estates and things like that, and they break up and it's big news and how they split those assets. Even a family that maybe doesn't have a lot of money, would something like a prenup still make sense?
Sure. I think even just a personal goal statement that each of you sign in the beginning and just talk about, if things go south, how will we remain our dignity, stay close, still be friends, and continue to raise your children, your adult children, or even your grandchildren with that in mind. So if you can start off the relationship beginning with the end in mind, certainly think that you have a better chance of dissolving and saving those hurtful feelings from affecting the rest of your life.
Okay, Felicia, that all sounds great. Sounds really smart, prudent, but here I am. I'm envisioning somebody head over heels in love, right? They go out, they buy a ring or some other really beautiful token of affection, and they plan to propose. Maybe they drive out to some romantic location like the Grand Canyon, or Felicia, you're in Oklahoma, right? So maybe they go to the Wichita Mountains or some other beautiful location in the Sooner State. And this person, they go old school, right? They take a knee, they pop the question, the other person says yes, tears, hugs, I love you. But then come the words, personal goal statement, we need to plan for the worst, before the wedding, I need you to sign something. Felicia, this just sounds like it's going to totally kill the mood. How's this going to work?
Well, it's always tough, but we know that money is a major problem with most couples. I think most couples would tell you that money caused their relationship problems. So if you just address it like that we want to make sure that money is not the reason our relationship ends.
Now, in the unfortunate event, Felicia, that a relationship does end, it just doesn't work out for whatever reason, what is the usual process for splitting and dissolving debts and
distributing assets and things of that nature. I mean, you're working in the field, you've worked with families. Can you talk a little bit about what that process looks like?
Yeah, I think most importantly, you want to pull credit reports from both of you. And you can do that through annualcreditreport.com. You can get all three of your credit reports, all three of theirs, and hopefully at this point you're in discussion and you're open to finding the best manner to close out all of your accounts together. So if you can sit down at the table and look at all of your creditors and how and who is responsible for each one of the debts, I think that's the best first start.
So you mentioned annualcreditreport.com. I also notice on television commercials for other companies and websites where you can pull credit reports. What's special about annualcreditreport.com?
It is a free service. It just won't give you your score. And we're really not interested in the score at this point. We just want to see the debt, the total debt of the relationship.
What goes into making a good credit score?
On-time payment, length of credit history, mix of credit. The credit bureau matrix wants to see how you handle an installment loan versus a home loan versus a secured loan versus an unsecured loan versus a revolving credit card debt. Your inquiries are also a part of that score.
So we're talking today with Felicia Freeman, a certified credit counselor, and she's talking about credit reports. And there are different types of loans, different types of debts that appear on credit reports, and they're weighted differently on that credit report. And she recommends the website annualcreditreport.com, a free website to pull a credit report. This is Native America Calling. We'd love to hear from you today. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about finances. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook, Native America Calling, or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. As always, we'll get those comments on the air. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back. No, I don't like
being alone.
Pope Francis is reaching out to Canadian Indigenous people. He is meeting with a delegation of Indigenous nations and planning a visit to Canada. We'll discuss how his gestures will be received following the grief and anger over unmarked graves found on former Catholic residential schools. On the next Native America Calling.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Today we're exploring the financial pitfalls of divorce. It takes time to bounce back from the end of a marriage, both emotionally and financially. We're talking about ways to ease the financial burden. Give us a call, the number 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before we went to break, we were talking with Felicia Freeman about how to approach some of these touchy topics around finance, money, and relationships. And I'd like to bring in Sheila Herrera into our conversation. Sheila, what's your advice? How do you recommend that couples approach what can be very touchy topics, very emotionally charged, just potentially topics that could really create conflict and stress in a relationship? How do we broach these topics?
Well, Sean, you know, it's like you said, it's a very touchy topic. Splitting finances, you know, during the separation can make financial management very difficult. So you always want to keep a few things in mind. So when our borrowers or tribal members come to us or anybody else, you know, I think the first thing you want to recognize is, are we in a community state property, or, you know, what's the common law for your state? And, like, New Mexico is a community state property. So when they come up to us, they're like, okay, so what do we, you know, should we get? We're married. Like, I've had a few tribal members come up to me and tell me, I want to go ahead and finance a home, but I don't want my husband to be on the loan. So right away, I'm like, okay, we're a community state property. The first thing you're going to need to do is maybe have a sole and separate agreement drawn up between you and your spouse. That, you know, allows your spouse to relinquish all rights to the property. And you can still, the tribal member can still get a loan. The married spouse will go ahead and file a sole and separate agreement. And then, you know, all your unsecured debt, I mean, you have to make sure examples of, you know, like if you're going to commingle funds, I think that plays an important role. So, like, if you inherit money and you deposit that money into a joint account with your spouse, the inheritance then becomes marital property. So you have to be really careful about that. You know, you probably want to get things in writing, like, you know, creating a new budget. Right away, close your shared accounts as soon as possible. File for legal separation. Divide your assets. Make sure you get everything in writing. And it's always good to always encourage anybody to pull a credit report. Like Felicia was saying, you could go to the www.annualcreditreport.com and pull your credit report, kind of see what debts. It'll let you know the borrower's debts and the co-borrower's debts. Because once you get married, I guess, you know, like you were talking earlier about, commingling funds during a marriage, and maybe about that prenuptial agreement, you know, that plainly states that, you know, property will and will not be considered marital property should there be a divorce. Don't use separate property to pay off any marital debt. So, like, if your parents give you a large sum of money, don't use that money to pay off your home or pay down credit card debt. You always have to remember, if the marriage benefits from funds, the funds become marital property. Maintain separate bank accounts, you know, that's always good. Because one spouse, if you have bank accounts together, of course, you know, a marriage starts off all peachy creamy, and then things happen, the other spouse gets upset, starts spending excessive money, stops making the mortgage payments. So there's so many important financial things that we need to think about in a divorce.
So you mentioned commingling assets, and it sounds like it's okay to have joint bank accounts and maybe a credit card that you both are authorized users on. But it also sounds like it's important to also maintain some separate accounts as well, maybe a separate credit card or another separate bank account, just so a person has that independent financial profile as well. Is that true?
And I think another important issue is, you know, with married couples or people even living together that aren't married, you know, isn't the rule of law saying that if you've been married to some, I mean, if you've been living with somebody for more than 7 years, you become like married. So if you're in a community state property, that's going to put you in the same position. So you know, I think by having, I think when you establish new credit on by yourself, like you said, you're getting that financial freedom of your credit, making sure your debts are paid down. Yeah, because I mean, your credit's going to be ruined automatically if you know, you got to keep on top of everything until you actually divide your assets. You know, probably dividing your assets and filing for a separate agreement or separation.
Okay, yeah. Separation, separate, filing separately. What about if, you know, thinking of a Native person in a relationship, and if it's two Native people in a couple, you know, there's very unique financial issues that can impact us as Native Americans. We could have land that's held in trust that we have ownership rights to. We might have income from trust assets. There could be certain laws that apply to the Native communities or reservations upon which we reside. But what about for a Native person that is married to a non-Native person? We see a lot of those couples as well. Any advice or things a couple like that should pay attention to?
The first thing I do is when I have, you know, a non-tribal member that's a co-signer, I'll go ahead and explain to them how important it is for them. You know, I'll explain to them that they're not going to be entitled, and there's a good possibility that if something happens to them or, you know, due to a death, a divorce, they could be kicked out. But then here this person, the other, you know, the borrower's been making all these payments on their mortgage, and I sit down and I tell both couple, you know, I tell both of them, make sure that if you're going to make payments on the home, make sure you keep track of it so you can prove. So if it does go to court, you can file for equity rights. So if you need to refinance your home, you can get an appraisal, and you can have those equity rights, even though you're not a tribal member here.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sheila. We have a caller comment, and they say, saving is key to financial security. When you first get married, commit to saving a full year's salary before making discretionary purchases. That sounds like some wise advice. I want to bring Miranda into our conversation now. Miranda, I'm sorry, but I have to put you on the spot. You're younger and you've never been married. However, I know you're in a long-term relationship with a really cool person. And I'm thinking that the possibility of marriage is not totally out of the question. So, Miranda, if and when that time comes, how do you plan to address these financial issues in your own life with your own relationship?
Well, I like what Felicia and Sheila said. You have to start the conversation early. And I've learned that with my partner. You know, sitting down and discussing what debts do you have, what debts do I have, but also addressing what you would want to commingle on. You know, are we going to have joint accounts? I grew up with seeing separate accounts, so I'm comfortable if we do separate, you know, bank accounts, separate debts, you know, possibly, if anything, with any couple is a home. You know, you would want to get your home together. So it's really sitting down and discussing what we see for ourselves as individuals and as a couple. And I think that's important. Something as small as even a phone bill. I know my partner's talked about joining phone bills, and that's something I struggle on because my phone bill is mine. My name pops up, and I like that independence. So it's also just making you sure that you both agree to, as individuals and as a couple, what you want to share. It is funny just kind of hearing the conversations because this is our, you know, long-term relationship. What do we see for ourselves? And then also just, I did laugh hearing the conversation between you and Felicia about, you know, the prenup. Because in my eyes, you know, I have built assets for myself and, you know, so has my partner. And so it's like, would that be something odd for us to see? Is because if I worked hard for my money and he's worked hard for his money, if something was to happen, if we did reach marriage and if something happened, to know that, you know, maybe we won't touch each other's hard work assets that we worked hard for. So I think it's just important to sit down at the beginning of a relationship to when you're getting closer for long-term future, because if you don't address those conversations and you don't address your goals before a proposal, before marriage, then you're going to be stuck wondering what page you're on with each other. And that's not something you want to go into because you want to have that clear conversation. People, you know, say, you're supposed to love me at my worst. Well, then it's also bringing up not the worst conversation, which is finances, but an uncomfortable conversation about finances. That's where you test your relationship as well to see what this other person expects from you with spending, savings, budgeting and what you expect from yourself in the relationship, and establishing that from the beginning so you both are comfortable talking about it. It's not, it becomes dinner table talk, and you have that comfortability to express how you feel and to be there during hard times of finances. You know, that can happen before marriage and after marriage. And then discussing if the worst was to happen after marriage, then agreeing to say, how are we going to handle this? Or are we going to make it easy for ourselves by saying we have separate accounts, separate debts, maybe only one shared debt, and that's it? Because with our classes as well, and with loans, sometimes people are in long-term relationships before marriage even happens, and they get debts together, and now have a customer come back, and then they took out a loan with that person, and now it's ruining their credit. And so you want to just make sure that you have those clear conversations from the beginning to marriage and even after marriage. You want to make sure it's a comfortable conversation, and it's not something that you push aside.
A comfortable conversation. And it sounds, Miranda, like you've had some of these comfortable conversations already with your own partner, talking about outlining debts and assets and things like that. When you initiated these conversations with your partner, what was the initial reaction? Was he open to talking about this stuff? Was he hesitant? So what was your experience?
I think when we first talked about it, we were both nervous a little bit because, you know, banking information is so accessible. You know, get on your phone, get on your computer, and you can see what you have in your bank, or you're already aware of what you're paying. That I think when we had our first conversation, it was a little hesitant on both sides to say, like, are we going to talk about finances? You know, what debts do you have? And it, of course, you maybe even on a first date, you should ask, hey, what's your credit score? You know, it's something that should become normal. But it, with us, it was a little hesitant, a little nervous to say, like, oh, these are your assets, these are mine. Or, you know, hey, I only have a small debt, and that's all I have for myself. I may not have credit, or I establishing credit, and then understanding what he had and saying, oh, okay, you know, you have your bills, and this is, you pay them on time. Or, oh, wow, you do have a savings, you know, and you are building that savings. I'm doing the same thing. It was a little, we were both a little hesitant, but it wasn't uncomfortable, which is what, you know, was really nice. I think if it was uncomfortable, then we would have to really, you know, circle back around and say, you know what, I know the last time we talked, we were a little shy, we were a little nervous, but, you know, I like you, or I love you, but we need to talk about this so that way it's not uncomfortable anymore.
So I envision a couple meeting for the first time, and, you know, these old classic pickup lines, what's your sign, stuff like that. Instead, somebody's asking, well, what's your credit score? might be an interesting way to kick off a relationship. Miranda, earlier you mentioned, you know, a situation where maybe a partner has a really bad financial mishap and they have problems with their credit, ruining their credit maybe. How does that impact that other partner that maybe has worked really hard to have good credit, and now really because of the actions of their partner, now they're in this situation where they're looking at this big delinquency with their credit or some financial account? How does that play out?
Well, I really see that if you are comfortable with those conversations, it could lead to where if there is a separation, a divorce, or a breakup, that you talk to that person. I know sometimes it can end nicely and sometimes it can end badly, but just to talk about, like, hey, remember we got this debt together. I know you're making the payments, but if you could look into possibly refinancing that debt so my name's not on it, kind of researching and getting that information from, you know, financial coaches or lending institutions to say, okay, you can refinance that debt and take me off and it won't hurt my credit no more. Or just addressing to, you know, the person, even my clients when they come in and I see the derogatory that they have on their accounts and their credit report, it hurts me as a loan officer and the financial education person in our office, it hurts me when I've seen someone building their credit and getting close to an average credit score or building themselves up. And then if they did get into a relationship and their credit falls down because they co-signed on a loan, you know, just educating them like you could, you know, possibly get this taken care of, or just addressing that person and saying, you know, hey, I really appreciate it if you refinanced and got me off. Or again, just addressing it in the beginning to say, you know what, I don't want to have any debts with you. And I think that's something that, again, should be talked about, because it really is important to say, well, if this comes to the worst ending, are you going to continue paying it, or are you not going to care and not pay it, and it's going to hurt my credit? And, you know, does that even matter to you that it could affect both our credit and that we're hurting each other still after there's, you know, no communication or no more of a relationship?
Folks, we are talking today with credit counselors, financial coaches in Indian Country, and the message is coming through loud and clear. Have these conversations sooner rather than later when it comes to money. Have your finances in order. Make sure your accounts are up to date. A lot of common sense approaches to making the most of your financial security. This is Native America Calling. If you have a comment or question for today's show, please give us a call, 1-800-996-2848, or email comments@NativeAmericaCalling.com. I'm your host, Sean Spruce. We'll be right back after this break.
How Mitakia Piki. Life's an adventure, but your health shouldn't be. Check out open enrollment options November 1 through January 15. Contact your local Indian healthcare provider for more information. Visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Thanks for tuning in. This is Native America Calling, and I'm Sean Spruce. Do you have any tips about avoiding financial pitfalls of relationships or divorces? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I'd like to go back to Felicia. We've been talking today about marriages, and statistics on failed marriages are shocking. In the United States, approximately 50%, half of marriages ultimately end in divorce. And for couples that choose to marry or individuals that choose to remarry, the divorce statistics are even worse than that. So, Felicia, what do you recommend for a couple? Maybe they've had some hiccups with their finances. Maybe they've had some issues with their credit report. Maybe they have challenges paying bills on time. Maybe they don't have as much savings as they would like to have. What's the best way for a couple to learn more about managing their finances, Felicia?
I use Money Habitudes a lot. Are you familiar with Money Habitudes?
No, I'm not. What is Money Habitudes?
It is a card game that helps you determine your money habits. So it's a deck of cards, and you go through the deck and you pick all those that are you. And it basically cuts down to these are your money habits. This is how you spend, earn, and save your money. And most people are really not aware of those habits that they have that are deeply ingrained based on your childhood. But it gives you the pros and cons of each money habit, tells you what to look out for, and it sets a really good tone on how, again, you spend, save, and earn your money.
So this ties back into what we discussed earlier, this whole idea of how we were raised and money culture and what we've learned from our parents and our grandparents and family members about managing money. Now, you've just described a game. And when I think of somebody learning about their finances, it doesn't seem quite as exciting as a game. I think of them maybe sitting in a workshop or reading websites or something like that. But can people learn about their money and important topics like this in a format like that with cards and in a game? That sounds cool.
It is it's really cool. And they just opened up or launched online, where you can do it online as opposed to having the deck of cards in front of you at a financial wellness workshop. But it addresses security, planning, status, giving, spontaneous, and carefree spenders.
Great. Sheila, I'd like to go back to you and talk a little bit more about money and finances. And, you know, I've heard a statistic that many people feel more comfortable talking about their sex lives than they do their finances. I mean, so many people are just abjectly terrified of talking about money. And then when we talk about like relationships and talking about these things with people that we love or potential spouses, it seems like it's almost more complicated. It just brings just one more layer of stress and anxiety into the whole picture. So Sheila, why is it, do you think, that we as Americans are so fearful talking about our money and so uncomfortable with these issues?
Well, you know, even, you know, in a family, I think it depends on the family and how you grew up. When I was growing up, my mom and dad talked about finances all the time. And my dad always taught me and my mom that, you know, always make sure you have, you know, an emergency fund in case something happens. And then as I got older, you know, make sure you have 3 to 6 months of savings. They never really talked about retirement, to be honest with you, until as I was older, within the last 12 years, that I really started thinking how important retirement is. But other families, you know, grow up with, you know, barely making ends meet. They never talked about it, and they grew up with families fighting over, financial stuff. Even personal, like even your credit score and stuff like that, if you don't talk about it when you're younger as a family, then growing up, you're not going to care about your credit. So I think, you know, because I was brought up in a family that always talked about, you know, finances, and even though we've had, you know, maybe some bad experiences in finances, you always want to be able to educate, you know, your kids, the youth now, how important it is, you know, about your retirement, 401ks, and stuff that you don't even think about when you're older, like wills and trusts. Power of attorneys for healthcare, like directives, retirement accounts and plans, jointly real estate finances. I mean, who would think that you would be talking to your kids when you get married and say, okay, maybe you should keep your money in a separate bank account and only deposit funds into a joint account if you want to use it for, you know, because you're married, or any funds left, keep it in a separate account if you own it and you're going to remain separate property. You know, you don't have those conversations with your family.
No, I don't think that many people do.
About that.
So what amazes me, Sheila, is when I watch television sometimes and I see all these commercials for credit reporting websites and information about credit reports and credit scores, and I don't remember there being that much attention paid to credit reports, even as recently as 20 years ago. And now we just hear about it everywhere and how important credit reports are and credit scores. Do credit reports matter more than just issues that we have with borrowing money? Why are credit reports so important nowadays?
Well, there's so much fraud, identity theft. Just yesterday, you know, if you don't educate tribal members or anybody to look at your credit card statements when they come in. This just happened to me last night. You know, I reviewed my credit card statements, and when I looked at it, I had a charge for Rex's Hamburgers. I never ate there before. So, you know, it was only $48. But just the other, you know, and 2 days ago, one of the girls in the office, they got into her bank account and it was $1,700 that they took. They've done that to us. So those, that's really important to, you know, to educate them to kind of continue to keep looking at your bank accounts because, you know, you're going to be delinquent on accounts. That's going to affect your credit scores. Identity theft. You know, what do you do in the case of identity theft?
Yeah,
places that you need to contact, like make sure you contact the three credit bureaus right away and put a fraud alert on your account. There's the fraud that just came up, you know, recently with unemployment benefits. So many people were taking it with unemployment benefits. People were actually creating fraud documents, you know, trying to collect on those benefits. So I think that's why it's so important to tell everybody, look at your credit report, pull it once a year, that way you kind of see what's going on. Is there any type of identity theft that happened that you can, you know, take care of?
Gotcha. Miranda, earlier you recommended having these ongoing conversations about money. Is there a tool or advice for having just regular cool-headed conversations about money so people's feathers don't get ruffled, so we don't get stressed out? What's available out there to help folks with these issues?
Well, of course, for data communities and for CDFIs, it's most common for us to turn to the resources we've have become made available to. So, like, my favorite curriculum, because of the representation, of course, is the Building Native Communities for Financial Skills for Families. And so I think it's important to turn to your local organizations that have financial education. And, of course, if you can find a Native Community Development Financial Institution within your area, to definitely see what they're offering, whether it be for families, for youth, because I think it's important, as always, to bring in your kids, if you have kids, into that financial community to start opening them to the dialogue, to get them familiar with financial terms, and for them to build their own financial skills as well. I think definitely turning and looking up, everyone uses their phones, computer, internet, to turn and see who's in your area that can help you with financial education. And, of course, turning to online resources and reaching out as you can if for in-person classes or finding online classes. And I think, you know, dipping your toes by just sharing a conversation, maybe sitting down, maybe not during dinner because, of course, finances can be a lengthy talk and you don't want your food to get cold. So definitely a time where you both can just have that space and have that time together to say, you know what, hey, I want to talk about our finances, and this is the savings I've built. Or do you save? Are you, you know, setting yourself up for an emergency? Or if we get married, are we going to live off one income and save the other? Or how are we going to do this? And doing that, you know, budget, creating a budget as well for your household is really good. And if you guys are going to have separate debts, are you going to have separate other household expenses? So are you guys going to share money on groceries? Is only one person going to buy groceries? Again, separate phone bills, kind of discussing what your game plan is. So neither of you are in the dark or confused as who's supposed to be paying what, or are we going to share money in one account for our household expenses and our debts? I really think it's nice just to start the conversation, set the time aside, and really discuss it, and then create a budget. There's so many templates available. And again, if you have resources or organizations within your area, to reach out to them to see if they have templates available, or even just a one-on-one session, creating that budget, really looking at it, and then possibly doing financial education together, because we're talking about how we're raised and everyone's different financial habits that they've seen, they've grown into, or they've developed, but it's really steps into it, you know, as a financial coach, I can tell someone to say like, hey, do this, do that, or go here, or do this. But it's really up to the individual and the couple to find what works for them. I think that's what's really nice with finances and couples is really tailoring it to what works for you. Understanding, are we going to talk about finances monthly, weekly, once a year, you know, seeing what's going to work for them as a couple, for them to grow and again to discuss.
Sure. Sheila, I want to ask you, because I see a lot of, even in relationships that I've been in the past before I was married, it seems like so often that one partner just seems to be a little bit better at managing money than the other partner. So is it okay for that one person that just seems to have more of a knack for handling finances? Is it okay to have that person handle all the bills and bank accounts? Does that make sense?
Yes, and I don't think it is. I think it's so important that as a married couple, or even if you're not married and you're living together, you know, you should always, as a rule of thumb, you should always discuss whether or not, you know, any purchases you make as a couple should be like marital property or separate property. I mean, do you want to have an equal interest in your home? Then you should use funds from both spouses to purchase the home with both spouses' name on the deed or mortgage, or maintain a separate bank account. So if you, like, I always tell my husband, in our household, I handle all the finances. But my biggest fear is to die or to even leave my husband with any debt or not let him know what's going on. And he's so good. He always lets me, you know, he lets me control all the finances. But I'm constantly telling him, hey, this, something happens to me tomorrow, you know, this is what's going on with the bills. This is what I'm doing. And because, you know, when you're in a community state property, your debt is their debt. So you want to make sure that your spouse, both couples, know exactly what's going in on finances. That's the most important thing. They should be aware of everything that you're doing.
Okay, we are nearing the end of the hour, but I do want to ask one more question, Sheila. And I've heard several times this term financial education mentioned, and Felicia mentioned this card game, and Miranda mentioned resources online and programs. Where can we go, like in our community specifically, to access what you call financial education? What's the best way to find that?
Well, you can go online. And then you could just pull up financial education, and tons, all the resources will come up. And you can look at the Federal Reserve Bank. You can look at the Native Communities Building Skills that Miranda talked about, even the card game that Felicia talked also about. And Dave Ramsey is great. I think between all of those resources, if you look at them all, you're going to find that they all are teaching the same thing.
Interesting. Really, really interesting. Great information, great insights. Again, talking about marriage, talking about money, making the most of our financial futures. Folks, that's all the time we have for our show today. I want to thank our guests, Felicia Freeman, Sheila Herrera, and Miranda Lenti. And for our married listeners tuning in, or those of you just contemplating marriage, good luck. Join me again here tomorrow for a show looking at what Indigenous people in Canada are hoping for in terms of healing as Pope Francis plans a visit to the country next month. You've been listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Thank you.
Haumitakuyapiki, which shows on a Parkik Ash, which shows on a Kihachachneo. November 1, January 15, Wahehan Oich Igwa, H Iganakapo. La Kolzani Oti Ilyayo is Samasoli at Shehantas. Healthcare.gov Ilyayo, Nishtel Mas Apkayo, 1-800-318-2596. Lewot Haniki, Medicare and Medicaid Otiata Huyapelo. Ho, Hechetuelo.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.